Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Breaks Plus. We'll do question chat. All right, so let me follow up on that with a question of my own. Will George Payton's honeymoon end immediately if his plan at quarterback is to bring back Drew Lock and fill in the blank veteran free agent?
No. I think there is enough positive potential to Drew Lock that Bronco fans would be willing to give Drew Lock one more year and give George Payton one year to make that evaluation. In some ways, that's the easiest path for George Payton. That's the least risky path. All you guys said you love Drew Lock. Okay, I gave Drew Lock a year. How's this year turn out? Then I can make with moves whatever I want. That's the way, I think, in my opinion, to give himself the most power overall. I listened to you guys. I gave him a year. It worked. It didn't work out. Now I get to do whatever the heck I want with no pushback. I listened to you. Now I don't have to listen to you anymore.
Okay. I hear what you're saying, but what if Deshaun Watson ends up getting traded to another team, not named the Denver Broncos? Does George Payton's honeymoon continue?
If the Matthew Stafford value that the Detroit Lions got For giving him up. If that's the starting point for Deshaun Watson, then I think most football savvy Bronco fans would recognize that's a big price to pay for a quarterback on, when you have a quarterback on your roster who seemingly has quite a bit of potential. So are you willing to give all that up for a team that has needs all over
the
roster?
So you're not in the blank check, give them whatever they want.
I think Deshaun
nothing is too much when it comes to Deshaun Watson.
I think Deshaun Watson presents an amazing upside and gives you a quarterback for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you're more than just a quarterback away. You're lots of pieces away. There's lots of ways to go after a quarterback other than overpaying for Deshaun Watson in free agency. There's going to be drafts every year. There's going to be college quarterbacks coming out every year. If you have a chance to build up the rest of your roster and then potentially get one of those guys, then that's a better way to go.
Oh, music to my ears. It's exactly how I feel. Oh, man, we are in total lockstep. It's why when I look at all the needs that need to be filled on this team, especially on defense, and whenever I hear anybody banging the drum for Zach Wilson or Mac Jones or Justin Fields, I'm like, hey, listen, why don't you just take this year, see if Drew Lock can make an improvement. See if Drew Lock can make that jump. Everybody seems to agree he's got the tools. Now let's see if he can make that jump. Let's see if there was something to the idea that he didn't have an offseason. He didn't have a chance to gel with Pat Shurmur. Let's give him that chance. And guess what? If it doesn't work out, guess what will be in the draft next year? Another Zach Wilson. Another Justin Fields. Another Mac Jones. Another Trey Lance. Now, will there be another Trevor Lawrence? No. But he was never part of this conversation anyway. So there will be another. That's just the cycle we're in. It's that crazy cycle that the NFL finds themselves in. This herd mentality, this panic. We got to get a quarterback no matter what. So we're going to elevate quarterbacks that should get drafted in the second round and put them up in the first, or guys that should get drafted late in the first round and put them up in the top five. That's the cycle we're in right now with the NFL. Eventually, we may cycle into a different one, but right now, that's where we're at. So, you know what? To your point, run it back again with Drew Lock. Continue to strengthen your football team. And guess what? A year from now, you can jump into that pool if you want.
The flip side to that, because there's always two sides to every argument, is do you anticipate having the ninth pick in the draft coming up anytime soon, where you would have the opportunity to get a potentially top-flight college quarterback? I was all in a couple years back when they had the fifth pick. You're not going to be picking fifth very often, hopefully. Why not take advantage of this and get one of these quarterbacks who's coming out in a draft that was loaded with quarterbacks.
Who'd you like?
I liked them all.
Really?
I thought they all
really.
They
you're,
all brought.
You're in the you can love four
Baker
different
Mayfield,
quarterbacks all the same.
Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson,
now
Josh Allen. I was unsure about Rosen.
Well, now whatever bond we formed has been.
It's been shattered?
It's been shattered.
You have the fifth pick in the draft.
The history of the NFL, especially the most recent history, the last 20 years in the NFL, tells you they're not all created equal.
They're not.
In fact, four out of five will end up being average or bust. Quarterbacks taken in the first round. We just went through a 8-year span where 22 quarterbacks got taken in the first round. None of them are with the team that originally drafted them. It really is a failed, if not failed, flawed model. And to say that you believe all four of them or all five of them are going to be the same, we already know that they're not.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a failing of Sam Darnold that he didn't turn the Jets into the Super Bowl champion. It's a failing of the Jets organization. There are far more pieces to the puzzle than just the quarterback's skill set when he walks into the facility.
Is Drew Lock being failed?
Is Pat Shurmur the best coordinator for Drew Lock? I think we can all agree that we haven't seen a play-calling game that says, oh, yeah, those guys are in lockstep.
Right.
Yeah. So it's part of Drew Lock's issues. Different coordinators every year, and then this particular coordinator, yes and yes.
And why is he here, Shurmur?
I don't know. I don't know. Where was this number one offense that he directed? Where's this?
Where's the track record?
Where's this Sean McVay-esque, Kyle Shanahan-esque creativity and putting players in positions to be successful and utilizing the talent around you that that every football fan can see? I don't see that either.
I mean, it's one thing when just fans and you know, blowhards like myself are sitting here going, oh, I don't get what, you know, Pat Shurmur's doing. But it's when the guys who played the game, guys like you, guys like Stink, you know, Tyler, all of them, Orlando, Nate, are all kind of like, I don't know if I really get this guy. I don't get what he's doing.
I don't, yeah.
And then why is he here? Because Vic likes him?
I think so.
That's
Vic didn't feel like he could trust Scangarello, but I think he feels like he can trust Pat Shurmur. And at some point, I think trust as a coach, particularly as a head coach who doesn't want to do a lot with the other side of the ball, trumps creativity or player scheme fit. Things that are important to us because we're not in the building, but as a head coach, it would be very difficult for me to accept you as a play caller, you not following my directions, not following my rules, not following the way I want this game to be called.
So I just want an offensive coordinator I don't have to think about?
In some ways, that's an oversimplification, but yes. Think about maybe too strong. Worry about.
Even though any savvy, I'm not even talking about football fan, anybody who's been in the game for any amount of time, especially somebody who's been in the game as long as Vic Fangio, decades, seems to recognize there's nothing special about this guy?
Yeah.
Huh. Huh. Okay.
It's kind of...
That's disturbing. That's...
What's the doctor's thing? Do no harm. Head coaches, it's not do no harm. It's don't violate my trust.
Hmm. So you got a guy that you don't necessarily trust, you don't really, you know, you don't really click with, but your young quarterback goes 4-1 with at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important to bring in a guy that...
That I can trust.
That I can trust.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about.
I can't have four or five...
I don't have to be wondering what's going on down the hallway.
Play calls a game that aren't within what we talked about versus there's four or five play calls that were within what we talked about. They were not necessarily well-timed calls. They weren't great calls, and I'm not sure why he threw the ball to that guy, but at least it was within what we talked about. I know it seems weird, but I, doing my coaching internships and seeing a different side of the game, I was blown away by the amount of decisions and thinking that had either little to do or the opposite to do with winning football, that were about trust, that were about comfort level. And I'll have this guy around. I trust him. But he's a terrible coach. I trust him. He's been part of my circle for 20 years.
Right.
He gives me honest feedback.
Right.
Well, he honestly sucks, coach. Well, he's sincere.
Yeah.
He's sincerely a terrible coach.
Yeah.
So.
But I trust him. I get along with him.
You do 18-hour days, 7 days a week for, 7 months. Trust becomes, I think, so critically important.
Going back to our conversation about should the Broncos be interested in quarterbacks like Sam Darnold or Jameis Winston or Mitch Trubisky, quarterbacks that probably need some, football rehab. And I said, in all cases, I'm not really interested. To which I got responses like, Evans, why are you always so about absolutes when it comes to quarterbacks? Another one, you're so one-dimensional. Look at the whole picture. The examples you give are from organizations that historically have been hot garbage. Sure, Darnold could be a dud, but how can you definitively say that he is? He played for one of the most dysfunctional NFL organizations. Have you been paying attention to the carousel of quarterbacks that have come through here?
Yeah.
We've had 9 quarterbacks since Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've seen how that's worked out. Hasn't worked out well. And now you want to say, hey, we took a chance on Joe Flacco. We took a chance on Case Keenum. We took a huge chance on Paxton Lynch. We all know what a colossal failure that was. Got a text early in the show from somebody saying, I love this. Texter said, hey, guys, Mike, today's day number 2150 of the Paxton Lynch smear campaign. That's a big day. You got to make it a good smear. Can't just be, skim milk. I'm like, okay, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. So this fits perfectly with the conversation. We have been, we have been the house on the block that takes in every stray. And we've been doing that for 5 years now. What has it gotten us? And you want me to take in more strays on the perhaps chance that maybe, just maybe, it'll work out here because it didn't work out there? I'm tired of that. I'm tired of taking in strays. Yeah, I do want more of an absolute when it comes to quarterback position. I am searching for that. And I'm not interested in taking gambles at this point. The Broncos aren't in a position. If this was 2016... and they just come off a Super Bowl, and they were, and Peyton Manning had just retired, let's say, and they were looking at, we got to kind of, reset our whole quarterback situation. A guy like Sam Darnold or, Jameis Winston, if we brought him in here, brought him into our culture, we could really turn this guy around. That was then, not now. I don't want to do that anymore. Do you?
So what is your
plan? You want to take in more strays?
No, I don't. First round quarterback picks, are they strays? Are they are unknowns, correct?
Yeah.
So that's not what you want.
No.
You want a proven free agent, Deshaun Watson.
I would either
that wouldn't be a stray.
I would either want
that'd be a purebred.
I would either want that, or knowing that I am dealing already, for somebody who says that, Evans, you want absolutes. Absolutes, I'm willing to take a chance another year on Drew Locke. How is that absolute? If I'm all about absolutes at the quarterback position, why in the world would I want to take another shot with Drew Locke? Well, it's because they have invested in this guy. They have put some time in developing him. And I've seen enough from him that I would like to see a little bit more before I determine he can't do it. He can't be the answer. In the meantime, I also recognize the fact that this is a football team that needs to be fixed, especially on the defensive side of the ball. There's a lot of upgrades that need to be made, a lot of holes to be filled. I'd rather do that than just continue to take chances on quarterback strays.
Mac Jones at 9. Is that a quarterback stray?
Yes.
Justin Fields at 9?
This just in. I don't believe in taking quarterbacks high up in the first round. I think they're overdrafted. I think they carry grades with them that are well below players that get drafted after them. I think it's hilarious to me that whenever we come around to the draft, I'm always told by people on the text line, hey, listen, you don't reach for players. You don't target specific positions. You take the best player on the board. And all that reasoning goes out the window when we're talking about quarterbacks.
That's how important they are. They break the mold. You have to, because you almost have to have a great one.
But if they're that important, you walked into my trap. If they're that important, then why, when we talk about the struggles, the failings of quarterbacks like Matt Stafford in Detroit, even Deshaun Watson with his 4-12, or even people who are trying to make the case for Sam Darnold, that, hey, don't hold the Jets against Sam Darnold. If these quarterbacks are so important and so crucial, why, on the other hand, are there so many of these qualifications? Well, yeah, but he still needs to have the offensive line, and yeah, but he still has to have the offensive coordinator. Yeah, but he still has to have guys to throw to. And yeah, he still has to have a defense to back him up. And yeah, he has to have stable ownership. Well, now what you're doing in that process, Chad, is you're kind of not delegitimizing, but you're sort of taking the importance of the quarterback. He's the end all be all. And now you're telling me there's all these other mitigating factors that come into how effective he really can be, which sort of lends to the idea that, you know what? Maybe instead of reaching for a quarterback, you should probably build up your football team.
Both are true. There's no doubt about that. But let's look over the Super Bowl winners.
Yeah, please do.
Of course, Tom Brady skews the heck out of this.
Absolutely.
Because there's so many Tom Brady Super Bowl wins, or even just Super Bowl appearances.
Right.
Man,
just go back recent history. Was Nick Foles an elite quarterback?
No.
Eagles won a Super Bowl. Was Eli Manning an elite quarterback? Giants won two.
He got hot at the right time.
He got hot at the right time, but.
And he had windows of elite during his career. Yes.
I would not call him an elite quarterback.
Okay, just go back to 09.
His career record is 120 and 120, or 128 and 128.
Yeah.
He's got two Super Bowls, because for 2 years, he had an unbelievable defense around him.
And he put together a good playoff run. Windows of elite.
He had a couple of really good playoff throws.
Okay, 09. Ben and Kurt Warner. Elite quarterbacks? Yes.
Yeah, Ben, I'll give you that one.
Ben's going to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. One is in the Hall of Fame.
The first year Ben won the Super Bowl, he wasn't an elite quarterback.
He was a rookie.
Right.
Yeah. New Orleans, Indy the next year. Drew Brees, Peyton Manning.
Yep.
Elite quarterbacks.
Yep.
Green Bay, Pittsburgh the year after. Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger. Yep. Elite quarterbacks.
Sure.
Giants, New England. Tom, Eli.
I told you how I feel about Eli.
San Francisco, Baltimore.
Hey, even Brady's first three Super Bowls. He was an elite quarterback then.
Man.
They had really good teams.
They ran the ball year one. He was still pretty good.
He was still pretty good, but he wasn't. No one thought of him as elite yet at that point.
By the third one, yes, he was elite. Baltimore, San Francisco. That's an outlier there.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Flacco.
Sure.
Seattle, Denver. Russell Wilson. Peyton Manning. New England, Seattle. Yes, elite.
Yep.
Denver, Carolina.
Peyton wasn't elite.
Peyton
was benched, 9 touchdowns, 17 picks. Brock Osweiler. They don't get to the Super Bowl.
He was an elite quarterback mind in a shell of an elite quarterback's body.
Okay, fine.
He was right play.
But he wasn't an elite quarterback anymore.
No, it was a great defense. Okay, New England, Atlanta. Matt Ryan, not tier one, tier two.
Okay.
He was, yes, to Ben's point, he was the MVP. Nick Foles. New England the next year. Gosh, there's so many New Englands in this thing. It's ridiculous. New England Rams. Jared Goff.
They broke him that day.
Yeah. He's never recovered from that.
Right.
Then Mahomes. San Francisco.
Garoppolo.
Yep.
Garoppolo's not elite.
Nope. And then this year, Mahomes, Tom.
Right.
80% elite quarterbacks.
I think you're going a little high there.
It gives you a much 80%. Better chance.
You've had plenty of Super Bowl winners over the last.
Plenty.
Yes.
Because plenty in my mind is more than half.
Peyton Manning was not elite when he won his. Ben Roethlisberger.
Elite quarterback mine.
Ben Roethlisberger wasn't elite when he won his first.
He was a rising tide that lifted all the boats.
Eli Manning wasn't elite when he won either one of his. Nick Foles wasn't elite. Joe Flacco wasn't elite.
He had an elite.
Heck, if you want to go all the way back to the Broncos two Super Bowls, John Elway was not an elite quarterback anymore when they won the Super Bowls.
But he... There is a... John Elway, Peyton Manning, if there's not the elite quarterback body, still the elite quarterback mind, they're still the rising tide that lifts all boats. They're still the leader within the organization. They still have all the attributes of an elite quarterback except for the elite play on the field.
But what the Broncos need right now is they need more than just an elite quarterback mind, right?
True.
They need the obvious physical skills that you could point to and say, that's an elite quarterback.
Because they don't have the rest of the team around them, correct?
Right. And my point is that I look at the history of first round picks in the draft over the last 20 years, and I, especially high up in the draft, I don't think the evidence points to, for a team that has as many needs as the Broncos do, to just reach out and draft a quarterback, any quarterback. You start doing
Then where do you get your quarterbacks from?
You start doing that, and now you end up being the Cleveland Browns for 25 years, who are irrelevant. I mean, they how many quarterbacks did they take in the first round over their 25 years of irrelevancy?
But okay? It's also an organizational responsibility within that. Some of those quarterbacks could have been good quarterbacks if that organization was better.
Exactly. Great. Yes, that is my point. I'm not looking to just draft quarterbacks because, to your point, you could draft somebody that in theory should be a good quarterback, but the organization ruins them, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm interested in is find me an organization that knows what it's doing. Find me an organization that has a Mike Shanahan in it who recognizes Robert Griffin III at the number 2 overall pick isn't the guy. Kirk Cousins, the guy you take in the 4th round, is the guy that I see that I can develop and turn into a really good NFL quarterback. Give me a Gary Kubiak who, instead of your boss John Elway pushing for Paxton Lynch, looks at a guy named Dak Prescott and says, hey, I see something there. I see something I can work with. I see something I can develop. That's what I want. People ask me, what do you want when it comes to the quarterback?
You want the sleeper fourth round pick.
I don't want dart throwing as my strategy. I want to have an organization that has smart people that know how to evaluate, know how to coach, know how to develop. And if you have those people in place, then you can find quarterbacks in many different ways, in many different places, without simply just, I need a quarterback, I have to get a quarterback, and here are the 5 that the Mel Kuypers of the world think should go in the first round. Let me take one of them. I think if that is your strategy, you are ultimately doomed to fail as a franchise. I mean, you could draft these guys, but ultimately, if that is the way your franchise goes about its business, you are ultimately doomed to fail.
The quarterback is the lead singer in a band. If the backup singers suck, it detracts from the lead singer's performance. If the band can't keep time, doesn't matter how good the lead singer is. But you still need an amazing lead singer to have a chance to be an all-time R&B or rock group or whatever the heck it is.
Right.
The lead singer is the most important piece, but they can't shine without all the other pieces. So you need to do whatever you can to find an amazing lead singer. At the same time, if you're Mr. Manager or Mr. GM or Mr. Owner, you've got to build the rest of the organization at the same time.
Fine. You're absolutely right. But it is foolhardy to think that I can take the Rolling Stones and there are 5 or 6 potential Mick Jaggers out there. I just have to pick one. And they'll all deliver like Mick Jagger. No, they won't. Mick Jagger.
I'm not saying that they will.
So if you are looking for the lead front man for the Rolling Stones and you are convinced you've got Mick Jagger, great, go get him. But if you're like, oh, I really like Mick Jagger, but I'm not going to get him. He's going to go sing for another band, so I'm going to take Milli Vanilli to front the Rolling Stones. You get my point? You can't treat them all as equal.
I got you.
All right. Exhausting. All right, we'll get to some more of your texts. I haven't looked at the text line in a while. I can only imagine what's waiting for me on the other side. We'll do that coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
All right, always enjoy our weekly visits. We're so happy that John Clayton is now part of our family here at the Fan, the Fan's senior Broncos writer for DenverFan.com. He's presented by Fleshenbeck Law, injury attorneys. John, say good morning to Chad Brown. He is joining me, sitting in for Mark Schlereth. And we've just been going around and around trying to figure out what's going to happen with Justin Simmons. He did an interview yesterday on XM Radio in which he said, hey, look, I want to be a Bronco. I know the Broncos want me. He seems confident that he'll be here, but will he be here on a long-term deal? What's the holdup? What are we waiting for?
Well, basically, they're still waiting to find out what the cap is going to be, because the cap is going to go right down to the wire and, you know, trying to figure things out as far as numbers and everything for long-term deals has been difficult. I mean, what all you've seen is a kicker from the Miami Dolphins get a long-term deal done on 4 years, and that's, again, because everybody's kind of waiting to see where the cap is and try to do it, and it's hard to do long-term type of deals. My guess is he's going to get franchised, because, you know, if you're going to be Justin Simmons, you know, are you going to be able to get that top market price of $14 million or $14.75? Buda Baker makes the highest at $14.75. Or if you're the Broncos, it's like, okay, here, we can franchise him at a little over $13 million, and we'll have him for 2 years at $25 million, which is $12.5 million a year. But the problem is, if you get franchised twice, you're not going to get franchised a third time, because it becomes a quarterback number, and, you know, more of the guys that get double franchised end up leaving because they can't get a long-term deal. But the safe thing to do is to put the franchise tag on him, keep him, see how everything goes with the cap, and then try to do a long-term deal by July 15th.
John, good talking to you. Von Miller is the kind of next step issue for George Payton as a new general manager of the Denver Broncos after Justin Simmons. What are you hearing about the Von Miller situation? And with teams missing out on J.J. Watt, does Von Miller become a potential trade asset for those teams to be able to come and get him from the Broncos?
Yeah, trade asset, no, because if you trade for him, you're picking up an $18 million cap. And so, well, that's just not good enough. I mean, you really can't do a trade. But what you can do is, I still think, you know, maybe the odds are that they are going to not pick up the option and let him go and save the $18 million. I propose that the idea should be, because if you look at the way his contract is structured, if he doesn't get the if they keep the option on him and not exercise it, it's a $7 million guarantee. Is he, after all these years of good football, worth a $7 million guarantee? Because you can make a move on him sometime in training camp after you see how he's doing. If it doesn't work, then you take a $7 million hit. I mean, right now, the Broncos are about, what, $26 million under the cap. And if you clear it now, you got $44 million, and there can be some more moves that can be made that can clear up some more money. I think the idea should be to try to give him a chance to be on the field with Bradley Chubb. And if it doesn't work out, yeah, then you take a $7 million guaranteed hit, and then he can go on to some other team. But, you know, I think right now the odds are kind of leaning toward them not picking up the option and then letting him go.
Does George Payton have a honeymoon this year for however many years when it comes to what he has to deliver right away?
He should, because, I mean, every general manager in the league is in a tough boat because nobody's been in a situation where the cap has gone down as much as $18 million and trying to deal with it and trying to deal with the idea that, you know, you have to cut players. You have to then see if you can pick up players on the cheap that are going to be maybe 50 cents on the dollar. Because, again, there's going to be a lot of good players available. But I think as, I know Michael Bidwell just said this the other day, the Arizona Cardinal owner, there's going to be more change in teams this year, maybe going from bad to good, good to bad, than we've seen ever. And so, I think, you know, if to judge him on 1 year, which is going to be difficult, I think it would be unfair because this is a year where draft wise, you can make more mistakes because of the way that the draft is going with no combine. And, you know, you can go to workouts, but still you don't know the college players because again, some have missed, haven't played since 2019. So I think you know, honeymoon should be 2 years, not 1 year.
Mike and I spent the last segment talking about quarterbacks. And what, in your NFL vast experience, John, what percentage of blame would you put on, let's say, a top five quarterback drafted, on the quarterbacks themselves versus the organization and them not putting the pieces around those quarterbacks to be successful? And I guess more specifically, it'd be in a case like Sam Darnold. Obviously, the Jets have failed to put talent around him. How much do you put on the quarterback itself, and what about the organization and their blame in that process?
Yeah, I think you put a lot on the organization because one of the things that ends up happening is that the league tends to make too many coaching changes. Owners change coaches two more. We had seven coaching changes this year. And what ends up happening is that, sure, you have a quarterback that you may have been able to draft high, but then you know you look at Baker Mayfield. I mean, what, he was on four different coordinators in 4 years, and that doesn't help out the quarterback. And so that doesn't help the quarterback grow. In the case of Sam Darnold, I mean, Adam Gase did a horrible job of trying to coach him and didn't get him to get any better. They were weak at the wide receiver and tight end position. Le'Veon Bell didn't work out at the running back spot, and their offensive line was substandard. And so what you notice, if a good quarterback goes to a really good team, one that's got stability, then that quarterback does well. You look at Russell Wilson, you look at Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you look all around the league, I mean, you look at any quarterback that's associated with Andy Reid because of stability. But again, I think what happens is you have all these coaching changes, you know, they change on defense from a 3-4 to a 4-3, you know, they change coordinators, and all of a sudden you're looking 2-3 years down the line, and the team isn't any good, and the quarterback goes bad. I mean, if you look at the most amazing stat is from 2009 to 2016, there's not one first-round quarterback with the team that drafted him.
So am I hearing this right? So if a highly drafted quarterback doesn't work out, it's not his fault?
Well, part of it is, I mean, because again, it's like part of, but also it's also part of the organization because maybe he shouldn't have been a first-round quarterback. I mean, that goes into it, too, because, you know, there tends to be, you know, an over-evaluation of the position in the sense that, hey, you've got to get a quarterback. But, I mean, I you go back to the 2011 draft when you had Jake Locker and, you know, Blake Bortles and all those guys. I mean, were they really good first-round quarterbacks? And the answer was no.
So we're kind of... and that's what makes this such an inexact science when it comes to trying to forecast what these quarterbacks are going to do.
Right, because again, it's like you're going to make mistakes. I mean, you know, look at the situation with the Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Patrick Mahomes ended up being the 10th pick in the draft, and the Kansas City Chiefs, good organization, recognized it. I mean, Matt Nagy, for example, was the first person on the Chiefs to really spot how good they thought he was going to be and started pushing the coaches to watch Texas Tech film, Texas Tech games when they were in meetings on Saturday at their facility. And he talked Andy Reid into taking him, and then all of a sudden, you know, Matt Nagy gets a head coaching job and he's stuck with Mitch Trubisky, who turned out to be a terrible quarterback. And so it's like, you know, you're right. I mean, some of it's on the quarterbacks, but more of it's on the teams that draft the quarterbacks. Because remember, the Bears traded up to get Mitch Trubisky.
All right, you can check out John Clayton's latest column at DenverFan.com. He writes about the free agent running back market this year and how it's so much different than what Melvin Gordon was able to get last year. John, thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John Clayton, that's our fan senior Broncos writer presented by Flesh and Beck Law, injury attorneys. Reads John's latest on the Broncos every day at DenverFan.com. Well,
He kind of helped make your point, but he also made my point. These quarterbacks are overdrafted.
Yeah, and
they are over-evaluated.
And bad organizations make bad draft picks. You know, that year he was just talking about, the 2011 draft, Christian Ponder went 12th to Minnesota.
Right.
Christian Ponder.
So
first round.
But that, so then what it comes down to, all right, I want to sort of put a bow on this conversation, but I want to take what Clayton said and kind of play it forward a little bit. We'll do that next. Research about quarterbacks taken in the top five over the last several years. It's not good, is it?
Well, it's not good for quarterbacks no matter where they're taken, really. Mm-hmm. There's no preferred sweet spot. I think the sweet spot is the first round because that's where you have the best chance for success. But no matter where you draft,
top five is not the best chance for success. It just look at it. Look at the last 20 years.
But so then where's the
best
chance?
Dreck. It's awful.
It's awful everywhere. No matter where you take a quarterback, there's a chance it's not going to work out.
But when you have, and thank you to John Clayton for proving and endorsing the point I've been making for years.
He also endorsed my point as well. Organization has more to do with quarterback failure than the quarterback itself.
Right, because the organizations are so poorly run that they're drafting these quarterbacks higher than they should go. It's a misevaluation, and that's what John said. A lot of these quarterbacks that fail high up in the first round never should have gone that high. And you're right, that points to an organizational failure. But it also speaks to a mindset that we've created this panic mentality that if we don't have a quarterback, we have to pick one. And it leads, in combination with the rookie wage scale, which certainly makes it much more palatable to miss on a quarterback in the first round
than it once was,
when,
right?
When you have to, you just have to guarantee him $50 million the moment they were drafted. It's much easier to move on from these guys. And what that has done is it's created this atmosphere of, throw darts. And
while you call
it, I'm just fundamentally opposed to the idea that when it comes to the quarterback position and passing on players that have much higher grades that your hardworking scouting staff has spent months, if not a full year, to put together recommendations, and you're passing on those players who have higher grades to throw darts at the quarterback position. Sorry, you'll never convince me that that's a sound strategy.
Were the Cincinnati Bengals throwing a dart when they drafted Joe Burrow number one?
Joe Burrow, we agreed yesterday, had the greatest college football season ever by a quarterback last year.
That's not dart throwing.
That's not dart throwing.
Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. Dart throwing?
Yeah, yes.
That was a dart throw.
That's a dart throw.
Baker Mayfield, Cleveland Browns. Dart throw?
Dart throw.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. At number one?
Yeah.
Now, if you want to take Baker Mayfield where he, you know, probably should have been drafted, middle, late first round, early second round, sure.
The Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland Browns have a really good football team. They have a really good football team.
Interesting how that works.
Isn't it? They have a good football team.
Okay.
Are you saying the only quarterback that could have done what the Browns did last year was Baker Mayfield?
I'm saying
there are a lot of quarterbacks that could have done
Baker Mayfield
for Cleveland what Baker Mayfield did.
Played much better football, took a 6-10 team the year before into a team that made a playoff run this last year due to Baker Mayfield being a better player. Good quarterback, playing better, made them a team good to go from 6-10, almost reversing that record, 11-5.
Mm-hmm. Different head coach.
Having that playoff
different
run.
Head coach, different mindset.
Organization
much,
around
much,
them.
Much more quarterback friendly, really placed an emphasis on running the football.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, you're never going to get an argument from me that you have to have an above average quarterback, okay?
Yes. So then the question becomes, how do you get this quarterback?
How do you do it?
And I don't
believe that the only way you can find that quarterback, if you have a well-run organization,
but
is to take that quarterback in the first round.
It sounds like your strategy is, hopefully we find a fourth-round guy that works out.
If I have a really good scouting staff, you're telling me that these quarterbacks that, why is it that I'm hearing these first-round quarterbacks who don't work out, it's the organization's fault, but if Drew Lock doesn't work out, it's all his fault?
I didn't say that.
I'm not saying you said that. I'm saying that this is what I hear when it comes to Locke. I don't hear, boy, the Broncos as an organization have let down Drew Locke.
You could argue.
But yet I hear that about Sam Darnold. Why? Because one guy went in the first round and one guy went early in the second round?
As much as we complain about Pat Shurmur, Adam Gase was a complete disaster compared to Pat Shurmur.
Okay.
Adam Gase did not put Sam Darnold in the position to be successful. We just heard John Clayton talk about the lack of talent the Jets had at the wide receiver and the tight end position. The Broncos drafted those positions heavily over the last couple of years and brought in numbers for those guys. Offensive line, Broncos addressed it after years of not. Jets have a terrible offensive line. I think it's a clear case of organizational failure for Sam Darnold. For Drew Locke, I'm sure you can point some fingers at the organization, but not a complete failure. There have been attempts to give him weapons to steady the boat in front of him as far as an offensive line. And now for the Pat Shurmur to come back, an attempt to provide some stability at the offensive coordinator position, even if it's not the most dynamic of offensive coordinators.
I mean, Adam Gase at least Sam Darnold had stability, right?
Well, stability, that's poor stability, doesn't help you.
Right.
You need some good stability.
So now we're counting on Drew Locke to make a leap this year because he's got stability with Pat Shurmur in year two. What if Pat Shurmur is just another Adam Gase? And right now the evidence would suggest it, right?
I think he's a little bit more steady than Adam Gase.
But he's not a difference maker.
No, he's not. There is not going to be an NFL owner who's going to be knocking on Pat Shurmur's door and saying, I got to sign you up because you're an offensive genius.
Right.
I need you to head my organization as the head coach.
Right. But John Clayton proved your point by saying, hey, a lot of these quarterbacks who get drafted high up aren't really supported.
Correct.
But then he proved my point by saying a lot of these quarterbacks shouldn't have gone there in the first place.
Okay. But then your point has a second part to it. And the second part is, then where the heck do you get the quarterback?
So
you can't just make them up out of thin air. You can't just say, well, let's go in free agency and get somebody. There's not 32 starting-level quarterbacks within the NFL.
That's why my khaki pants strategy is you can find these guys. Jimmy Garoppolo, second-round pick. Nick Foles, fourth-round pick. Russell Wilson, third-round pick. Kirk Cousins, fourth-round pick. Dak Prescott, fourth-round pick. Derek Carr, second-round pick. They're all over the place. Jalen Hurts, they move Carson Wentz out. Jalen Hurts is the incumbent right now in Philly. He's a second-round pick. That's my point, is that they can be found. And if you're a smart organization and you have people that know how to identify quarterback talent, the idea that the only people that can play quarterback in the NFL are guys who get taken in the top 10 is ridiculous.
I'm good. I'm glad I'm
it's
coming back tomorrow.
Ridiculous.
I can't wait to come back tomorrow.
Good. You are invited back again.
This is your show, so I'll let you have the last word.
No, you get
but
the last word.
Last word
no,
on this.
You
no,
get the last
no.
word. No, you please. You're the guest, please.
I need more space than what the break is going to allow me to have. I'll get you tomorrow.
Oh, you're going to be working hard, huh?
Yes.
The snakes are going to have to wait. Beyonce's going to have a... She's on her own today, right?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for filling in. It's always lively. That's for sure. Thank you to all the texters. Thank you for extending the Paxton Lynch Mayor campaign to day number 2150. We got Sandy and Big O coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.